Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
For the next few days, we're going to highlight films from the upcoming Human Rights Watch Film Festival, which is starting to stream on June 11th. A documentary from the festival feels especially timely today. It's about the shooting death of a black man by an Asian police officer. At this moment, most of the emphasis has been on the white police officer who killed a black man. But there were three other officers on the scene in Minneapolis, and one was an Asian American who turned his back as the other officer kneeled on the man's neck. The Asian officer has not been charged, but his involvement brings up the complex history between black and Asian activists. It's something we saw play out here in New York City, and it's documented in the new film Down a Dark Stairwell, about the aftermath of the 2014 death of Akai Gurley, who was shot while descending a staircase with a friend, his girlfriend, in the Pink Houses in Brooklyn. The officer who shot him, a Chinese-American man named Peter Liang, claimed the shooting was an accident. He was a rookie cop. He said he heard something in the stairwell, which was dark because the light bulbs were burnt out. Protests began immediately, demanding accountability for Akai's death. At the same time, large swaths of the Chinese-American community in New York began organizing in support of Peter Liang. Many felt that he was being unfairly targeted to demonstrate that something was being done to address police brutality against black Americans. As the film points out of the 113 killings of black men by police officers in the past 14 years, only one officer has been convicted, Peter Liang. Director Ursula Liang, no relation to the officer, documented the Akai Gurley case in her film Down a Dark Stairwell. It will have its New York Digital Festival preview as part of the Human Rights Watch Film Festival on June 17th. The Human Rights Film Festival is hosting a virtual Q&A with Ursula at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Ursula, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So you write in your director's statement that the moment you arrived at a protest in support of Peter Liang in Brooklyn, you knew it was historic, but that maybe others might not realize that at that moment. Why did you realize at that moment that something special and historic was happening at this protest?
Well, I think Americans have sort of become a little bit immune to protest. I mean, we're seeing it right now. There are thousands of people out in the street, and this happens all the time with a lot of different communities, but from my perspective as an Asian American person, it doesn't happen as often and with as much presence as in the Asian American community. So when I saw this massive protest in downtown Brooklyn in support of Peter Liang, I kind of knew that this was something different and that it might pass by in people's TV sets as just another protest happening. But for our community, this is a big deal. So it meant something very specific. You know, the case, I think there are Asian Americans protesting on cases all the time for various things, for representation in the media, et cetera, but the scale of this particular protest was something unlike anything I've seen in my lifetime, and I'm older than I'm willing to admit on the radio.
You know, of course, one of the cardinal rules of documentary filmmaking is to show, not tell, right? So what was the thorniest issue or the topic that you found was particularly difficult to show?
I mean, a lot of this is very difficult to show, but I think, you know, what I tried to do with the documentary is to let audiences in on the quieter moments. What was easy for people to show was the energetic and, you know, confrontational stuff that was happening in the streets. That's the kind of stuff that makes a 3-minute, 2-minute package on the news every night. So that stuff is very easy to show. It gets people interested in paying attention. But what's difficult to craft in a documentary is the quieter moments. But I think they're essential in helping people understand where the real pain is for communities and to understand sort of the strategy behind people's protests and people's energy in the streets.
You open the documentary with a long section of the 911 call from this case. Why did you want to start your film there?
Well, I think from a storytelling point of view, you needed to hook people into the emotion of what really happened. The 911 call is actually a neighbor to the police, and those are not necessarily characters within the film, but sort of this feeling of a bystander witnessing this terror in her own building was really powerful. And the first time that I listened to that call in full, I think it's probably around 8 minutes or so, whatever I heard the first time, I was captivated the entire time. And, you know, as a documentary film that's being edited over the course of 10, 12 months, you move everything around and around and around, but that stuck at the top for a long time because it's just, it's just so compelling. And I think, you know, it's another thing we wanted to do with the film is really elevate sort of the everyday voices, not mm-hmm. always the spokespeople within a movement. You know, there are people that get chosen to speak out about cases, but these, you know, cases affect everybody. And even down to the people that were not coming outside to protest every time the Akai Gurley protesters came and protested at the pink houses where this incident took place. That group might have been small, but they were speaking to people who were inside their apartments and had their windows open and might be listening. And each one of those people are affected by a case like this, even if they're not on the streets.
My guest is Ursula Liang. We're talking about her film, Down a Dark Stairwell. What are the facts of the case that everyone agrees upon that happened in that stairwell?
That's actually hard. I mean, this is not mm-hmm. a case where you had a camera filming the entire thing. I think everyone agrees that the lights were out. And I think everyone there in the case, it was argued that it was an accident. But if you talk to activists on the Akai Gurley side, there is no accident about a gun going off in a black community that feels over policed all the time and has unnecessary police presence all the time. The bullet did ricochet off a wall. And that was presented in court. I mean, I think it's a little bit of a difficult question to say. Mm-hmm. There are facts, but there are always interpretations of the facts. And that is your perspective in life really changes how you see those facts. But in the case, it was interesting from a legal point of view, because there were a lot of agreements on both sides in the prosecution and the defense. And no one argued, they didn't argue very adamantly about some of the presented facts. And it wasn't presented as not an accident in the court case.
Why do you think this particular case inspired the New York Chinese activist community to be out there, to be so invested in this particular story?
Well, you know, this is a moment that happened just after the Eric Garner case. So the Black Lives Matter movement was in full swing. And this was the first case to, like, bring the Chinese community into the conversation. You know, it was when you talk to people who were at the protests on the Chinese side that supported Peter Liang, they saw it as a case that could potentially affect people and their families. They saw Peter as a family member in some ways. There is a lot of cultural nationalism within the community. If somebody looks like you, you have a tendency to support them. But they also saw this as a guy that was like the kids in their family or like the brothers in their family. He was educated. He seemed to be trying to do the right thing. And he was familiar. He grew up in Chinatown. He spoke Chinese. So I think it felt like a threat to the family in some ways to some of these people who supported Peter. And it also felt like, you know, they had seen the injustice to the black community not having cops prosecuted for killings of unarmed black men. So they saw that injustice, and all of a sudden it felt like there was a turn that only affected their community.
Those in support of Peter Liang, there was one word that kept coming up, and they kept describing him as a scapegoat. And some of the black activists took issue with that, saying, you know, a scapegoat is someone who is being blamed for something someone else did. No matter what, Peter Liang did this. But I'm curious to what you think about the word scapegoat and why they chose the word scapegoat. Were they talking about something else?
Yeah, I mean, I was wondering about that, too, because I think that the idea that they really wanted to convey was more of a sacrificial lamb. But scapegoat did get propagated. And I think one of the things was that there is a linguistic barrier for some of the Asian people that were protesting on the Peter Liang side. And so using the term scapegoat was oftentimes echoing what some of the organizers had said. And they were very clear in how they wanted to present the language of their protest movement. There's also this thing, and this is not fact at all, but conjecture in Chinese culture. Like, if you look at the 12 zodiac signs of the calendar, I believe that goat and sheep are kind of the same animal. So there might have been some loss in translation thing at the very top. But, you know, scapegoat does have like a very specific definition for people who speak English very clearly. But I think it's used in various ways. And I think the way it was being used by the Chinese American community definitely rubbed the people on the Akai Gurley side in the wrong way. It implied that he hadn't done anything.
Right. But as I was watching it, I thought, are they actually talking about he's being scapegoated for other officers' wrongdoings?
Yeah, and that's where I think like Sacrificial Lamb is more of the idea they wanted mm-hmm. to convey. They felt like he was being presented to appease the black community for all the other officers who had killed black folks. And they felt that that was unfair, that their community member was being offered up to try to quell the unrest in the black community.
You capture an interesting scene where some of the activists fighting for justice for Akai Gurley's death, they debate using the chant "Model Minority." And one activist thinks it invokes white supremacist language, it's anti-Asian. Another activist thinks it's fair game. Why did you want to include that conversation? How does it factor into the story of Peter Liang?
Well, there is a long history behind that term. There are a lot of people who do see the Asian American community as a model minority community, and a lot of people within the Asian American community that want to promote that idea. But it is like a separatist language that's been used for decades to divide communities. And I think that's important for people to understand. I mean, in New York City, I think there are about 1 in 8 people are actually of Asian descent, and we have the largest poverty rates of any other group in the city. And so what's unaccounted for is the number of undocumented and the diversity within the Asian American community. There are, of course, people who fit that stereotype, and there are also people selling fruit in Chinatown off a cardboard box, and those people definitely don't fit within that model. And so I think, you know, it's a term that the community has very little representation in the media. And so if you have the opportunity to show your community in a positive light, you're going to want to do that. If you're only being mentioned every once in a while in mainstream media, let's make our community seem good. Let's make our community seem successful. Let's make our relatives back home feel like we've got the American dream. But the reality of life for Asian Americans is very different from that for a lot of Asian Americans. And that includes different Asian American groups that are whose numbers reflect different realities. So if you talk about South Asian Americans, if you talk about groups that have had later immigration here or come from war-torn countries, those communities have very different realities. And, you know, in the story here, you know, a lot of what we're seeing within this confrontation between the two groups is a divide which could potentially undo a lot of the solidarity of movements that have built over time. So that particular scene, I thought that was really telling, because it first of all showed like the intelligence of the organizers and how they were debating these things internally and really thinking things through and really discussing with each other. And they're not just out on the street like blurting things out. They're really thinking through their strategy. And I think that's really important for people to understand. You may see like people in the streets today and tomorrow and yesterday, but a lot of what they're doing is very strategic, and I think that's important for people to understand. It's not, you know, it's not angry yelling all the time. It's like really thoughtful and careful organizing, which builds movement.
My guest is Ursula Liang. We're talking about her film Down a Dark Stairwell. So ultimately, Peter Liang was sentenced. He was convicted, but he was sentenced to probation and community service with no prison time. How effective do you think the Chinese-American activists were? Do you think they had an impact on his sentencing?
That's a good question. I mean, they had a lot of numbers, and I think one of the things the case proves that there's a growing political presence for Asian Americans. Asian Americans have felt very invisible in the political spectrum for a long time. You know, I think the last DNC was the first time an Asian American person stood on a stage. Of course, since we made the film, we've had this Andrew Yang moment, which has brought a new idea into the importance of Asian Americans in politics. But this was like, you know, the fact that they were able to mobilize so many people, I think, was very significant and was a moment of pride for that community. And I do think the political pressure probably had some effect on what happened. You know, that's all conjecture. I can't say, but there were thousands upon thousands of letters that were sent to the judge and the DA. So, you know, audiences can make their own decision about that.
One of the officers, as I mentioned in the intro, who stood by while George Floyd died, was a Hmong American man, and they are an ethnic minority in Laos, and they're the largest ethnically Asian community in Minnesota with a population of about 90,000. This is all according to the New York Times. So I'm very curious, what opportunity do you think this moment provides to have conversations about Black and Asian American relations?
Well, again, you know, it was not a good look to have an Asian American standing by as a man was killed on camera. It's, you know, all these moments do have opportunity for conversation. And I think the urgency of Asian Americans showing their commitment to the movement for Black Lives has really been underscored in this moment. This is, you know, the Asian American community is not a monolithic community. No one should think that in the Peter Liang case or in this case, that everybody's on one side. It's a very diverse community with a lot of diverse thought. And in this moment, I think you're seeing an underscoring of the folks who support the Black Lives Matter movement coming out and speaking out. And, you know, in my personal social circles, I see a lot of support from the Asian American community for this movement.
The name of the film is Down a Dark Stairwell. It's streaming starting June 11th as part of the Human Rights Watch Film Festival. There'll be a Q&A on June 17th at 8 p.m. with Ursula Liang. Ursula, thank you so much for joining us to talk about your new film.
Thank you so much.
NYC Now delivers breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. By sponsoring our programming, you'll reach a community of passionate listeners in an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to learn more.